It's been about 3 weeks, I guess, since the announcement of this initiative. And I'm curious to know how you think it has been received, what you think people are understanding, or maybe more importantly, not understanding about what this initiative is.
The reaction that we've gotten to the introduction of Health Vault has been amazing, far beyond what we had even hoped. It's clear that we've hit a nerve, I think, in the industry and with people about something that's not been working, and that there's a hope here. And I think really people are giving us credit for the hope, not necessarily what we launched, that we can actually make some improvements to healthcare that are meaningful, and that Microsoft might be just the right group to actually take on that challenge. And so it's been very positive. We've had great uptake on from developers looking to leverage the SDK to build Health Vault applications in terms of both providers and institutions, and people have been trying to do direct-to-consumer things around health and fitness. It's been a very exciting time for us. If you ask what is it that people aren't getting, I think there is actually sort of a key piece that gets lost a little bit in the news, and that's really, are we or aren't we as Health Vault a PHR is kind of the question that comes up again and again. And
You should spell out PHR.
oh, I'm sorry, personal health record.
Yes,
So
yes.
in the industry, the personal health record application is kind of a known quantity. It's something that has been pushed for many years, and it has some very clear benefits to a set of users, but it hasn't really gotten great broad uptake. And you think about it kind of as the database of your health information. And many people have found that, without connectivity to your providers to keep things being up to date automatically, without real device connectivity to help actually, make that stuff flow, the uptake on those PHR applications, you've had to have real serious motivation. You have to be a chronically ill patient. You might have to be taking care of somebody who's, really having a complicated condition before you realize the benefits. But at the same time, those benefits are real, and they're really real for lots of us if you could get over some of those barriers. Well, Health Vault is not that PHR application. Health Vault's an enabling technology, and the best way to think about it is like PayPal. I don't buy through PayPal. I can go to PayPal, review my account, see what's been happening, audit, the activity on my account. But what I normally do is I go to eBay or I go to another merchant and I make a purchase, and I happen to use PayPal because I trust that experience, because it's convenient for me, and because it's ubiquitous in my shopping experience. And that's the enabling technology I use to get my transaction done. Well, Health Vault's very similar in that you could imagine many applications, whether that be, copying data from my provider for an encounter that I just had, or that I wanted to compete online in some virtual way with my friends who live afar and help us get in shape. I actually have an application or a scenario or a need that an application fills, and those applications are almost always going to be provided by third parties, not Microsoft, although we will build a few.
Right.
And then Health Vault underneath provides the trust layer, the convenience layer, because I know that data is there and reusable and portable for me, and I trust it, that actually allows those applications to work better.
So, in terms of what people can see and experience for themselves right now, of the three broad categories of application here, which I would characterize as the web applications that are online now and are affiliated to the Health Vault. Things like, I think, Pure Wellness and a few of the other examples. I've tried a few of them. So you can go to one of these websites and you can maintain some personal records there about your weight or your physical condition, and you can synchronize that data to the Health Vault. So that's actually the one thing I think that most people would be able to go and experience directly.
Absolutely.
Then there's the case where I have some sort of personal health monitoring device. I'm actually using a gadget to read my blood pressure or my blood sugar, and those readings can flow into my Health Vault, and that's something that really very few people will have seen yet. And then the third piece is if my hospital or my healthcare facility is connected into the vault, right, then I will have an indirect experience through that relationship. And that's the one that I think is going to start to become real, at least for those folks who are involved in participating hospitals or facilities. And I wonder if you can, I'm not sure who's doing that yet.
There's a number of people starting to do work on that, and I'll talk to those in just a second. The really cool stuff comes out when you cross those three domains. and the domain and the data actually becomes useful from one to the other. So, you know, I'll go back a little bit to the scenario that we walked through in our demo, because it's really at a launch day, because it was really kind of a nice end-to-end kind of example where, you know, we're able to actually take that that personal record, the Pure Wellness or the CAPMED application, we're able to use that in a personal way as a management tool for you, taking the device data, being able to push that and view that personally through applications like the American Heart Association application, mm-hmm. but then, most interestingly, being able to actually take that data and move it to your provider. So now not only are you storing that data and managing that data for yourself, but in a very convenient and clear way, you can go ahead and actually get that to your providers. Well,
just to clarify, when you say moving it to your provider, what you really mean is authorizing your provider to have access to that subset of records within your area of the vault.
That's correct, although it actually can happen in a few different ways. In some scenarios, and one of them that's live today, it actually is a push model as well, where I would actually take a package of my data and move it forward into that physician system.
Okay.
So it really can happen in a lot of different ways. The two sort of maybe best prototypes that are active out there now, one is with outpatient facilities, and it's been built by a company called Cryptic. Cryptic actually has a business of selling to doctors communications software that interacts with their electronic medical record system, in particular GE's Logician, which is one of the biggest out there. And they originally were born to sort of help doctors refer to one another. I have a patient, I want to send some of their data between us. But they've expanded into providing to patient connectivity as well. And so as a doctor, I can have a patient portal provided by Cryptic that allows you to maybe schedule an appointment or things like that. Now, to date, those have been very disconnected experiences. And what Cryptic did with the Health Vault launch is they actually enabled two-way transfers of data. So what was very interesting in the blood pressure scenario is, you know, you're diagnosed with hypertension, and what usually happens is the doctor will say, well, I want you to measure this for 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. I want you to change your exercise habits and your diet, and I want you to come back and let's see how you're doing, and then we'll make some decisions about whether medication's the right thing or what our next steps are. Mm-hmm. And with Cryptic, you can actually take that data that you've captured either from a device or manually if that makes is easier for you in your Health Vault. You can go to that patient portal sponsored by Cryptic. You can actually view from there, you can authorize it to view the blood pressure readings in your account, mm-hmm. select the ones you want to send, and they automatically will appear in your doctor's EMR. So they can actually not just see, hey, you're in the office, what does it look like today, but what does it look like for the whole period of time that you've been under this measurement and trying to figure out what the right next steps are.
So is the scenario here that because the doctor advised the patient to self-monitor, that the patient who would not normally have had that device is going to borrow it from the doctor for this purpose?
Absolutely. And, you know, we're working with the companies to bring their price points down as fast as we can so that you can walk into the drugstore and pull these off and do them. And one of our big design goals was to make sure that we worked with where the market was today. If you look at the healthcare device market, it's not a, you know, all Bluetooth, all Wi-Fi market. It's serial and IR and all these crazy protocols, because those are the cost-effective ones for people in the market today. And who are really counting every penny when they build these devices. And so, you know, the WPD schema that we put together, the Windows for Portable Devices interface that we built for health devices, allows for both those higher-end and those lower-end devices to play. So we think it gets easier and easier for people to have them in hand over time.
Okay. And in particular, if the hospital or the doctor is providing this device, then that at least alleviates the concern that the person is going to go out and buy the wrong thing and have a...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So that part makes sense. So then continue with the scenario.
Well, the neat thing about the EMR software that people have, and this, of course, we have nothing to do with at this point in time, but what we realized was they actually have really great data management analysis and even alerting tools that just aren't really able to be leveraged today because there isn't a stream of data like that. So in addition to this sort of, hey, what's been the last 6 week thing, we foresee a lot of use around diabetic monitoring over time, or just that blood pressure management, or even scenarios like weight management, which is actually pretty exciting. In one particular case, and I love to quote this because one of our Azixi doctors was the first one to tell it to me, and I've heard it again and again, which is that there's actually a double-digit percent indicator that somebody who's had a previous heart attack is going to have another one. And this is sort of not known in the general public, but it's clinically pretty clear, and it's that people start gaining weight, and about 2 weeks later, they have another heart attack. And what ends up is, for whatever reason, they begin retaining water. Their heart has to work harder. And this gets continues unchecked. People don't really notice it, and they end up in the emergency room. And by actually being able to have a stream of data that would allow doctors and providers to recognize these trends as they were coming up with very simple data like weight, you actually could be in a position where, you know, the 20 mil could save you thousands and thousands of dollars and some serious damage to your heart. So those are really exciting scenarios for us.
Could you actually hook up a bathroom scale to the feed?
You know, we're working with a company called A&D right now to build that has Bluetooth-based scales that we are trying to get them connected, and we expect to have that within a month or two. As well as, you know, as we're trying to make sure that the UI, you know, what are the things that stop people from recording this manually off their regular device? Well, one of the biggest things is just going to a website and logging in and all this, you know, that kind of headache is more than most people will stick with. And so we're trying to, across the spectrum, from device to no device, do as best job as we can. So you'll start to see in the Connection Center client application little UIs that make it easy. Hey, did you record your weight today? Just get it in there. It's one number. It's pretty straightforward. You know, at least give that every couple days. We'll start to make some progress.
Right.
So you'll see that again and again in HealthVault, whether it be, you know, from full connectivity with providers on one end down to the fact that you can get a personal fax number for your HealthVault at the other end. There's 85% of those docs out there who only work on paper, but they all have fax machines. And while that data may not be, you know, having an image of your immunization record isn't as great as having it structured, it's sure better than not having it at all. And so we've really tried again and again on these axes to go where we want to go ideally, but also meet the market where it is today.
So there's an interesting question that came up. Actually, I raised it on the forum, and Eric Gunnarsson replied. And the question was about the extent to which there were likely to be local applications running on people's PCs that were talking to the HealthVault as opposed to these authorized portals and third-party web applications. There wound up being kind of an interesting twist to this, which is that, in fact, it's much easier for HealthVault to certify a third-party application that is web-based than to certify a third-party application which is distributed to client PCs and run locally.
We think there's a lot of great reasons to get rich client apps hooked up to HealthVault in a scaled way. And so what I'll start out by saying is this is something we're working to figure out a good answer to.
Mm-hmm.
But as with everything, we've been very conservative with HealthVault because we're not going to release technology out there until we're really confident that we can fulfill the privacy and security obligations that we've taken on.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the sort of fundamental tenets behind the way that authorization in HealthVault works is it's not enough to just know what access a person has to the record, but your interface, your interaction with that record's data is always through an application. And so there's a trust decision that's being made with that application as well.
Exactly.
At the time that a user chooses to use an application, we hold locally metadata about that application, and we know what types of data it requires to do its job, and we present the user with an ability to say, yes, I okay the release of just this information so that I can use this application. And in order to enforce that obligation that we've taken on, we need to know with great certainty that we're actually talking to the application that we think we're talking to. And the way we do that in the web world is by virtue of data centers having physically secure access points. So the cryptography between the application and HealthVault, there's a private key that they use to prove their identity. They sign a particular package of data. When they initiate connection to HealthVault, us having the public side of that key are able to verify that they are who they say they are. And we rely on, and customers rely on, the physical and network security of that private key in order to provide that promise.
And the ability of an established organization that is running a partner application, which is web-based, to understand and correctly implement the cryptographic protocols And so there's just there's a really interesting kind of inversion here, in fact, where I thought it was amusing what Eric said on the forum, which is that in a funny kind of way, the normal protocol says that write access to a database requires more trust than read access. But in this particular case, it can actually flip because you can, for example, allow the customer from their PC, which is connected to their monitor, to pump records into the vault, but you wouldn't necessarily want that same device to extract information from the vault. An interesting twist.
It really is, and it turns a lot of things on its ear. And you know, you mentioned about how it's a factor of also how that application or that partner organization does do a good job of key management and understands cryptography. And you know, we've tried to make that super easy for them, but it also is, at the end of the day, part of that trust decision. Do you believe that the American Heart Association takes your privacy seriously enough to have invested in this, you know, in the required controls?
And exactly.
Part of being an open ecosystem is having those trust decisions and really trying to nail that UI and that interface and those policies is something we'll be continuing to work and try to get better and better at for years from now.
So talk a little bit about the emergence of data exchange standards in this space, what it is that we're supporting now, what it is that we're, you know, looking forward to the continuing evolution of.
One of the tenets that we have set with Health Vault is we are not trying to engage in any kind of standard setting with Health Vault.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the data types stored within the Health Vault, each type is an XML document typed by an XML schema. And the majority of those types have their pedigree in existing standards. There are some sort of envelope around that we do, but really we took many of our data types from an organization called Indivo Health that's been working on personal health records out in the Boston area for many years and is actually just announced to be the basis underlying the DOSIA project that will be undergoing to provide records to employees of Walmart and Intel and a few other companies. So, you know, we've reached out and said, you know, Microsoft's role in this venture over time is that we understand information transfer, we understand empowering consumers, we understand how to make the goo underneath it all work. But the domain experts are the ones who really understand what data has to be. So we've mm-hmm. looked out to those existing standards, and where they haven't existed, we've engaged our domain expert partners to help us make sure that we have the right information. A great example of that is fitness, where the folks at Polar were incredibly valuable to us in helping us figure out what should be those types should be. And for glucose and diabetes, the folks at J&J and LifeScan were part of that process. And we have a set of doctors on staff as well to help make sure that clinically, you know, these types are clinically meaningful. So internally, we've tried our best to really leverage what's out there in the world. And our watchword really for this is being transformable. It's to say that there's going to be a bunch of standards out there in the world that get implemented in different software systems. And our goal is not to dictate which one that should be. Our goal is to say that when you move data into the Health Vault or out of the Health Vault, it's transformable so that it can be reused in those different systems.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, from an interchange perspective, there actually are two standards out there today that have seen pretty powerful or pretty prevalent use, and we are supporting both of those. One's called the Continuity of Care Record, mm-hmm. put out by an organization called the ASTM. And the second is a continuity of care document, which is a very similar structure put out by a group called Health Level 7, which has been involved in medical data standards for many, many, many years. And both data that comes in both of those formats, actually, I should be clear, today only CCR goes in. Within a few days, CCD will be representable as well. And we have partners today. The MedStar network of hospitals moves data into the Health Vault in CCR format, so that it can then be broken down and shared with others as well.
Mm-hmm. There's also a forthcoming set of standards under the rubric of HITSPE, right?
Absolutely. And Microsoft's actually been a big part of that organization for a long time. Roberto Rogeri has been part of those efforts for many years, and he's now actually on the Health Solutions team, primarily focused on our enterprise business, but he is very engaged with us as well to make sure that as those standards become prevalent out there, Health Vault interchanges with them as well as with anything else.
Mm-hmm. So for most people, this will become a reality as and when the hospital or the doctor that they work with gets connected to the health vault more likely than that they'll directly connect themselves to it?
That's certainly a big number and a big scenario for us, but we also believe there is a set of self-management scenarios that often start with search, with health vault search, and say, you know, I've been diagnosed with this kind of condition or my child has, and what kind of can I do about that? And we do believe there's actually entry there as well for people to discover devices and to discover applications that could be very useful to them in ways that actually really isn't part of the healthcare delivery system today in any real way for folks. And those are some of the scenarios that are really the most exciting because they actually say it's more than just moving data around. It's about adding new types of value to that data as well.
Mm-hmm. And about people taking control of their own situations and doing things that they can do for themselves as enabled by this arrangement, right?
Exactly.
The initial conversation is going to be a lot about, and appropriately, about how we ensure that this information never leaks. But on the flip side of it, there are several ways in which, I mean, obviously, ultimately, the information wants to flow in appropriate ways. And one of those appropriate ways, obviously, is for people to have this continuity of care as they move around within the healthcare system. And that's a kind of a personal benefit. There's a kind of a societal benefit. You know, we all suffer from rising costs. The structural inefficiency of the system as a whole is one of the things that's just killing us as a society. You know, one of the things that people talk about there is, well, you know, we haven't had across the board any ability to really understand in the aggregate what are the outcomes of this, that, or the other kind of treatment or drug regimen or something like that. It's probably early days for this kind of thing, but I can certainly imagine an option in the health vault that says, you know, release my data in an anonymized way so that it's available, you know, for this aggregate analysis. Has that come up?
It's come up in many discussions, and it's absolutely a direction we think we'd love to see happen. You know, I think what might actually happen as some of the first expressions of that and the most active discussions, and again, let me be clear that this is not something out there today, but it's discussions that we're actively having, are around clinical trials. You know, if you look at things like the Vioxx recall and challenge that we had, and you really ask the folks involved in that, well, what happened? You know, the challenges are that it's incredibly hard to find appropriate subjects for these trials, and it's just incredibly expensive. Mm-hmm. And so you end up doing trials with smaller sample sizes than you'd like. And what we would love, and you know, on the flip side of that, there are many, many people who would love to be involved in these trials. My wife, for example, has a chronic condition, and the ability to look for new and innovative treatment is something that she would welcome and be happy to, in an anonymous way, share her data to become part of. And so allowing people to opt in, do appropriate searches that identify the individuals that might be great candidates for these trials, and be able to anonymously initiate an invitation that then could create, you know, an ongoing relationship with pharma or other research ventures who are actually trying to create these drugs, it could be a huge impact both financially and societally on you know, the way these drugs make it to market. So that is exciting, super exciting. And, you know, we've made these really strong claims that this data is not going anywhere without you saying it's okay. And we're going to stand by those. But everybody we talk to believes that a huge portion of our user base, if, you know, within that environment, would be happy to raise their hand and say, I'm willing to contribute my data to those experiments, in most cases with anonymization applied to that, and in some cases, frankly, without it. And so we think there's a lot of opportunity here for people to feel comfortable about engaging with that kind of aggregated research in a way that feels good to them and ultimately could, I think you're right, benefit us in some really significant ways.
So can you talk through a little bit some examples of who some of the early partners are and what kinds of projects are ongoing right now? What are we going to be seeing come out of the pipeline?
So one of the first things that we'll start to see is more and more device types. So we mentioned earlier we're talking about weight, we're talking about pedometers, talking about things like insulin pumps, some ongoing continuous measurement devices like pulse oximeters that are greatly valuable in diagnosing sleep apnea. There's been a great project that happened here at Microsoft over the last couple of years in the research group around home diagnosis of sleep apnea, and which today requires going to a sleep clinic, which is incredibly disruptive to people's lives.
Yeah, no, I know a few people have done that. It's a big deal.
Yeah, and actually being able to do that at home and then have that data available to a clinician who could help start to figure out what the right treatment for you is something that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
In addition, I think we certainly will start to see some of this aggregated analysis ability that we've just been talking about. There's a number of companies that we're speaking with that are active in the space of personal genomics, where they can actually do a test. They basically send you a kit, and you provide a sample of saliva, and they analyze that and can store your profile within the Health Vault for you, and then actually continue to run tests over that on an ongoing basis as our ability to target and understand those genetics more and more over the years. They can actually provide you more and more accurate data about what you might be wanting to be screened for and what you might wanting to be thinking about taking care of yourself for far before it becomes a critical situation.
So what about the kind of bread and butter situations like the absolutely routine and mundane but yet vexing scenario of, well, my kid's going to camp and, did he or didn't he have this vaccination? How can I get a hold of that information, right? And that's contingent on the procedure in the hospital or clinic being tied into some application that is in turn tied into a system like this. And so I'm kind of curious about what we can expect in terms of, is there like a relatively small number of clinical applications that have really a really big installed base such that when those are captured, we're going to get a big immediate jump on this? Or is it going to really be more of a long tail kind of thing? I mean, how should we think about that?
I think it's different for different scenarios. The two scenarios that I think will actually come through most quickly are lab tests and medications.
Okay.
Because both of those data types and those workflows are pretty automated and do actually have some sort of bottleneck points in the system that we could provide very large coverage very quickly. And so we're really focused on those two and the idea of being able to ultimately, not get tests again that you need, that you've already had, and be able to reduce the amount of radiation you get and be able to reduce the amount of cost that you have. That's the real message for labs. And for meds, it's really about the clipboard and interactions and compliance, and being able to know that as when you're being treated in an emergency facility on vacation, they're going to have the right information about your situation to know what they can and can't give you and what you're already taking.
When you say there are bottlenecks, do you mean that there are, again, relatively few applications that cover a lot of these situations, or that it's the case that at this point, information is flowing through networks in hospitals in ways that can be captured with intermediaries, or both?
It's a little bit of both. So for labs, there's actually, some very well-defined mechanisms for moving those around. And for outpatient labs, there are a few very large companies that handle the bulk of labs for folks. And so those two things combined make that a much more fruitful potential way for us to reach a lot of people quickly.
Okay.
Meds are very similar in that the mail order pharmacies, for example, have created hubs that actually almost 70% of the nation's prescriptions actually flow through.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously challenges around working with those hubs to make sure that people's privacy and is really managed. But there's the hope that some of those types of technologies, as well as excitement on the part of retail pharmacies, of which there's maybe six or seven out there that cover a great percentage of the country as well, there's a lot of momentum there to start making that data available to people more quickly.
Okay.
Immunizations, I think that one will take more time, and in some ways, I think that today, the first thing I went and did is had my doctor fax our family's immunization records into our Health Vault, and we have them now, and they're available there and ready for us, to have when we need them.
So one possibility is just to send the image into the vault and at least have it in that form.
Absolutely, and we think that's a big part of getting people rolling. Now, I should say that's not a free service. It does cost $9 annually to get a personal fax number where we can send, you can send any, you know, have anybody fax records and information into your Health Vault account.
Okay.
And, you know, the neat thing about that is there's actually, if you look at other implementations, whether it be Revolution or others, that idea of faxing into a record is not new. But what is new is the idea of having a personal number, and that really changes the game a little bit, because today with most of those systems, you kind of have to say, okay, hey, doctor, can you please use this magic cover sheet that has this magic barcode on it? And the one thing that never happens is changing doctors' workflow.
Yeah.
So by being able to give them just, hey, can you fax to this number, that really changes that game and opens up a lot there. So that's probably the way it first happens, like you say, and because the outpatient community is still so paper-based, 85% of the docs out there are paper-based, that will be a slower uptake as we're able to, you know, work with the Cryptics of the world, and certainly there's a whole lot of motivation for those outpatient doctors to start to automate those procedures. There's Allscripts, which is another of our partners that works with outpatient docs to provide EMRs and other solutions, has a project they're engaged in. Actually, they're one of the leads with Microsoft and a number of other companies in a project called NEPSI to provide physicians with free web-based tools that would allow them to do e-prescribing of medication and management of labs data and some very of the more basic electronic medical record type features and provide that to them for free. Hmm. And we're working as part of that initiative to make sure that as that happens, those systems are Health Vault enabled so we can take advantage of the transactions that begin to happen there as well.
Okay. Do you want to say a little bit about the way in which the search features that have been rolled out recently are going to play into this arrangement?
You know, we end up talking about kind of one or the other all the time, but I appreciate you bringing that up because search really is a critical component to making that whole ecosystem work. You know, what happens is when people are dealing with health online, they go to search first. This is just the reality and the way it happens. And usually that's because they have a topic that is complicated or scary or new to them. They need to understand it. And so we went out and we spent a lot of time working with individuals who do these searches and try to say, well, what's different and what do you need and what's working and not on the web for you today? The result of that is Health Vault Search and the integration of Health Vault Search with our mainline search product at live.com. The first thing that that you see is that you know that the first avenue is the mainline search product. And so when you do searches for things like diabetes and healthcare related topics on live.com, what you'll start to see is a introduction to the more vertically specialized topic will show up right on that mainline page.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually has been in test for a number of weeks now and is just about in the next day or so ready to go live to 100% of live.com use. Once we get you to that vertical, that vertical search experience, we really try to first give people a landscape or an overview or context of what they're searching about. Really, you know, we believe that web results are the best way for people to get the information they need versus a walled garden a la WebMD or some of the other providers out there, because we believe the richness and the breadth and the personalization and the individual stories that come through in web content are really what people need to get the deep answers they want. But those web results are kind of intimidating if you're just coming into a topic. And so by providing first what we call our dashboard, which is at the top of the Health Vault search page, providing a lot of different contextual, here are the drugs that are related to this topic, here are the procedures you might have to undergo, and that sort of thing, found that it's a way for people to really refine and get to a more personalized search more quickly. But even beyond that, just being able to scan those links really gives a sense of context. I kind of know where this fits into my world now.
Mm-hmm.
We then provide a set of what we call overview articles. And this is not, you know, you're not going to find, hey, this was what was on the Today Show today about eating right. These are really articles that talk about here's a condition or a drug or a topic, and here's an overview. This is how you can get your feet under you and understand what's going on. And we actually have selected a number of sources with very differing points of view to try to make sure that whatever people are comfortable with is going to as an authority, they're able to find. Those range from Mayo Clinic, very traditional sources in the National Library of Medicine, mm-hmm. down to more community-focused resources like Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, we're not making a judgment about which one is right. We're saying whatever you trust, that's where you should get that first introduction for you. Once you've done that, we have a filtered set of web results for you. And when I say filtered, it's not filtered in the sense that we remove items. It's filtered in the sense that we've actually augmented the query to try to bring the most clinically relevant information up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So between those, we think we've done a really good job and gotten some great feedback about helping people understand their topic. And then there's this last step, which is that with a health topic, I really need to do something about it. I'm either sick or I have to monitor something, or find a doctor, or I have to take some action here. And so in our monetization world, and this is where Health Vault makes its money and is able to be sustainable as a business, we're able to introduce people to services and products in a way that's at once familiar, text links and things like that, and also a little bit new in what we call these action modules. And if you do searches on Health Vault Search for topics like diabetes or weight loss, you'll see some of our early ventures into these topics where the advertiser has actually created, and the advertiser may be a service or it may be a Health Vault application or a device, they've created an experience that's right within the Health Vault Search world that gives a much deeper introduction to what's behind that click.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the privacy policy for the target of where you'll end up, for example. And for insurance, you might actually be able to fill out and in part of the insurance form before and understand what you're going to be asked before you get through that gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the end result is we're feeding people into that Health Vault ecosystem where they can start to really engage with the healthcare system in some new ways, doing it in a way that we believe is a little more comfortable and gives a sense of privacy to folks. And actually, as a result, also sends more qualified leads to our advertisers, which makes more dollars for us at the end of the day.
So in the case of the example you gave of people don't realize if they've had one heart attack that they're very likely to possibly have another one if they've been gaining weight recently. So if you're in that category, the idea is you might be doing some research on the web about heart attacks. And first of all, by the way, I believe also an aspect of this is just a way to consolidate this health research that you do on the web, right? To persist it into
that
your
is account. Correct.
Yeah. So, you know, in other words, just a convenience of keeping track of those things that you already found. But then the idea might be, well, you know, here's something that you can do about this risk that you might not have known, and that might then lead you to an interest in a product and a service that enables you to monitor your weight and feed this data in and be alerted if something drifts.
That's a great way to put it together. Absolutely.
Okay. This has been very good. I think we've touched on a lot of things.
You've clearly spent some time with this service, and you pulled out all the hot buttons, and we're working on all of them and having a great time and I think doing some good stuff. So it's been exciting so far.
It really is. Okay.